Welcome to installment 29 of Sefer HaMitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's commandment is positive commandment 17, the commandment on a Jewish king to write a Torah scroll for himself. In yesterday's positive commandment 18, we learned that it is a responsibility for every single Jew to write a Torah scroll. As we have discussed, this can also be fulfilled through the purchase of holy books, that the commandment is written to write a scroll, since in those days one could not write the oral Torah. But now that the oral Torah can be written and is printed, then the commandment is fulfilled. The commandment to learn is fulfilled by writing or even purchasing any holy book. As we discussed, however, there is still a great mitzvah in writing or participating in the writing of a Torah scroll, and therefore one should endeavor as much as possible to do so. This can be fulfilled through participation in sponsoring a letter in one of the general Torah scrolls, which have been written all over the world, which has the other benefit of uniting the Jewish people, since we are all united in one Sefer Torah. And just as every letter of the Sefer Torah is essential to the validity of the entire scroll, so too the participation of every single Jew is essential to the completeness and perfection of the Jewish people. This is therefore a commandment on every single person, and in particular, as the Rambam says, on men. The Jewish king has an additional commandment, which is today's positive commandment 17. He must write a second scroll for himself. The scroll that he has, as every individual was required to have, was then placed in his storage house. The second one was written, and it was always together with him, was never separated. As the Rambam, in his legal code, quotes the saying of our sages, that when he went to war, the scroll would be with him. When he would return, it would also be with him. When he sat in judgment, it would stay with him. And when he ate, the Torah scroll would be right next to him, opposite him, so it would always be in his presence. The Talmud in Sanhedrin mentions another detail, that the Torah scroll was attached actually to the king's arm, and he would wear it like a sort of amulet, so it would always be not only together with him, but attached to his body. The Rambam, however, omits this detail. This is interpreted by the commentaries to indicate that the Rambam understands this allegorically. Not that literally it is attached to his arm, for how could he attach an entire Torah scroll to his arm, and especially in the middle of a war? How would he be able to fight and ride carrying a Torah attached to his arm? Therefore, the Rambam understands this allegorically, that it should be presently in his sight, and next to him, as if it was attached to his body. Parenthetically, the Das Kanim, a commentary on Chumash, explains that possibly the scroll referred to here contained only the Ten Commandments and was not the entire Torah scroll. Why then does the Chumash say he must write the entire Torah? Since the Ten Commandments contain hinted form all of the commandments of the Torah, as we learn that the Ten Commandments contains 620 letters, corresponding to the 613 commandments and the 7 rabbinic commandments. Therefore, since all of the commandments are hinted to in the 10, he is required to merely carry the 10 commandments, which hint to the entire Torah. However, the Rambam solves this problem in a different manner, apparently, and holds that he is not required to attach anything to his arm, rather it must be always in his presence. The Rambam mentions in Sefer HaMitzvahs that it should never be separated from him. However, in his legal code, he does indicate certain circumstances in which he may not carry the Torah. For example, when he goes to the bathroom or into the bathhouse, or at night when he goes to sleep. Since these involve places of filth or times when he cannot be careful about the holiness and sanctity of the Torah, he should not keep the Torah with him, but rather leave it close by. So when he finishes in these places, he should come back and directly contact the Torah as soon as possible. Why is the king required to have a second Torah scroll? What is its function? In Chumash, it is explicitly indicated. The Chumash says it should be with him, and he shall read it all of his days. Leman yilmad liyira es Hashem elikov, in order that he should learn to fear God, and to keep all of the Torah and all of its laws. We see then that the king must constantly be involved in Torah study. As much as his communal obligations permit, he should consistently bind himself to the Torah and be always involved in its study. The Torah gives another reason for why the king specifically has to have this second scroll. Levilti rum levava me'echov, in order that his heart should not become above his neighbors. In other words, he should not feel superior to them or become arrogant over his brothers. The Ramban explains that the king is commanded so not because he needs it more than anyone else, but rather this is a general commandment of the Torah against arrogance. And we should learn from this even more so other people. The king, who does have what to be arrogant about, after all, he has a tremendously holy personality, and he has an increased knowledge of God and closeness to God. And if he is commanded not to feel superior, all the more so everyone else is commanded not to feel superior, since they certainly have even less reason than the king to feel superior. Therefore, the king is singled out. The Chinuch, however, has a different explanation. The Chinuch tells us that the king actually needs this warning more than anyone else. That since the king has such absolute power of rulership over his subjects, as we shall learn in the commandment regarding a Jewish king, that the king has absolute life and death authority over his subjects. Therefore, the king must constantly be aware that he is subject to God, that he is no better than anyone else. He is also a human being. And this, that he has powers over other people's lives, does not make him any better than them or superior in any way. This concept, that the king must have actually more humility than anyone else, is indicated also by a law that the Rambam brings in Hilchas Tefillah regarding the prayer service. The Rambam tells us that in the standing silent prayer, one bows down four times. However, the king, once he bows down, must remain in a bowed posture for the entire prayer. The reason for this is that since the king has a certain feeling of superiority, or at least a potential for that feeling, due to his tremendous power over his subjects, he must take precautions in order that he should not become carried away with this power. Therefore, he must be constantly reminded of his tremendous self-nullification to Hashem. Therefore, when he bends, when another person bends, he can stand up right away because he has his humility before Hashem, and he can stand up again. However, the king, once he bends down once in the silent prayer, he must remain bent over to implant in himself and strengthen this idea that he is totally nullified to Hashem. It is explained in the Hasidic philosophy that this idea of the humility and self-nullification of the king is not only incidental, but this is part of the essence of what a king is. Why is it that we need a king? After all, every Jew has a direct correspondence and a direct relationship with God. We do not put any intermediaries between ourselves and God. We rather pray directly to Him and serve Him. Why do we need a king as an intermediary? Chassidus explains that the king is not an intermediary. There are two types of a mamutza, someone who is in between. One can be a mamutza hamafsik, an intermediary who interferes and interrupts. Therefore, one must ask the person, and the person intervenes with Hashem. But the idea of a king, according to the Torah, is not like that. Not at all. Rather, the function is an opposite one. His function is as a mamutza hamachaber. He is an intermediary with the sole purpose of helping people bind themselves to Hashem. And with his complete self-nullification, he has the power to implant this bittul, this humility and self-nullification in all of the Jewish people. Rather than interfere with their direct contact with Hashem, he strengthens it. With his bittul, he is able to pull everyone else and allow them to have a direct contact with Hashem, even more than they would be able to have without the king. since without the king and the example of his self-nullification, everyone has their own arrogance and their own feeling of selfishness. But when they see the king so totally devoted to Hashem, this inspires them and assists them in having the direct contact with Hashem even more than they would have without the king's example. This idea of bittul, or self-nullification, is a key to a central concept in Torah, ivdu as Hashem besimcha, serve Hashem with joy. As explained by the Rebbe Rashab, that if a person is arrogant, he will always be unhappy with what he has. No matter what blessings Hashem would give a person, the person feels he deserves more, and therefore is never happy. However, once a person has a self of self-nullification of bittul, the person will be extremely happy, in fact overjoyed with anything Hashem gives him. Since he realizes that he is not perfect, and he can certainly think of an excuse about why any blessing should not come his way, after all he knows his lack of perfection, when something does come, he's in a tremendous state of joy. What's the cause for his joy? His bittul, his self-nullification. Since he feels that he doesn't deserve so much, when something does come to him, he's in an extreme state of simcha, of complete joy. This is perhaps part of the reason why King David was able to reach such an exalted state of complete simcha, as related in the book of Prophets, that when the Holy Ark was being brought back from captivity, King David led the procession and danced and sang and made joyous noises with all of his might, to such an extent that his wife reprimanded him for treating the kingship lightly. How could he behave in such a fashion before all of his subjects? But as the Rambam himself quotes at the end of Hilchas Lulav, King David answered his wife, that I would even treat myself lighter in people's eyes, for yisi shafal be'enai, and I would be humble in my own eyes. That due to his tremendous humility, he had a great feeling of joy and simcha in his closeness to Hashem, without feeling his own greatness, rather only the greatness of Hashem and his closeness to him. In conclusion, it is interesting to mention that the phrase used in the Chumash referring to the second Torah scroll is Mishnah Torah, the second Torah. This is also the name that the Rambam chose for his legal code, Mishnah Torah, in that case referring to the second Torah, second to the written Torah. As the Rambam says, one that learns the entire written Torah, the five books of the Chumash, and then his legal code will be versant in the entire Torah, both oral and written. However, since we see the Rambam chose the name Mishnah Torah, which is used in Chumash to refer to a king, we see there is some similarity between the Rambam and the king, which is implicitly recognized by those legal commentaries on the Rambam, which use the name king, Mishnah Lamelech, and so on, referring to the work of the Rambam. And as the Rambam himself concludes his legal code with the laws of our final king, the ultimate king, Melech HaMashiach, may the study of Rambam and the study of all of the 613 laws of the Torah lead us to speedily greet the arrival of our righteous Mashiach, B'mheirav Yameinu Mamash.